welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to a double bill, really. We've got two different sort of shows to get you through your quarantine this week. First of all, we are going to have a Remember the Name section, where we are going to look back on the career of Dinyar Bilyaletdinov at Everton, which is bound to be a bit of an interesting conversation. And the second segment of today's show is going to be a little look back through the great kits of Everton over the years. And for you lucky listeners on the podcast, at the end, we're going to have another If You Know Your History quiz. But first things first, how are we doing? We've got Max Carlisle and Terry McAllister to join me. How are you guys?
Evening, gents.
All right, fellas, you okay?
Yeah, I've been worse. I'm just getting a bit stir crazy now. I'm running out of things to watch. So, what have you guys been watching?
I've, honestly, stuff I've already told you about. I mean, we've gone over Tiger King. We've gone over, well, not quite gone over Sunderland Till I Die. I've watched from pretty much start to beginning Parks and Recreation. I'd seen a couple of seasons of it before, but I'd never followed through with it. Liked it, and now I've just stuck with it, and I'm really enjoying it. But it's hardly new or worth telling you about, because just a sitcom. It's just funny. I enjoyed it. How about you?
I think for me, I've been starting on The Stranger. I haven't actually seen that yet, so saw my first episode this morning, and it was one of them. I've been quite busy today, so I've only managed to get round to one, so maybe later on tonight I'll binge a couple of them. But I've heard a lot of good reviews about it, so I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that. What about you, Max?
Over the last couple of days, I've just made a start on Narcos Mexico Season 2, so polished Season 1 over the last couple of days. And just before that, off Teddy's recommendation, I watched the Amazon All or Nothing Brazil national team documentary during the 2019 Copa America's, featuring our boy Richie doing an absolute bit at the end. Absolutely brilliant documentary, the way it was put together. I mean, if you've seen Manchester City All or Nothing, then you pretty much know what to expect, but the way it sort of captures the Brazilian culture, the football culture in Brazil, I should say, you know, nowhere else on the world is quite like it. And, I don't know if you know, but I put a little clip up at the end of when Richie scores that penalty in the final, and he retweeted it, and I've had my phone blowing up for the last couple of days of just Brazilian people. Certainly very passionate about the football.
Yeah, I think the Brazilians are something else when it comes to the football. And like you say, I think it can only do us a favour having someone like that, like Richarlison, just also introducing the club to Brazil and introducing Brazil to the club.
What are you talking about, mate? We had Joe.
Oh, yeah, of course.
National treasure.
We had Juliano Rodrigo before any of that.
I want more Brazilians after watching that. I mean, if you watch it, you see Richarlison and David Neres are like the young kid. Like they're the ones who were introduced to the national team properly in that tournament. And the two of them are like playing like, you know, tricks and pranks on what's the man's name? Edison. Yeah, I was going to say, I was got stuck on Claudio Bravo, but it wasn't him. Yeah, they're playing tricks on Edison, and it just makes me want David Neres at Everton all this, like, even more than it is anyway. Just get all the young Brazilians in and just make us the Samba Blues properly.
Honest to God, I can't think of much things better. And to be honest, we know Carlo Ancelotti has a bit of a track record of bringing in Brazilians. He's always had one or two everywhere he's been, so fingers crossed he can replicate that at Everton. But we're going back now to the past, and we're going to be looking back on the career of Dinyar Bilyaletdinov. What did you guys make of Bilyaletdinov? Like, what was your memories of when we signed him back in 2009? Terry, what was your opinion on Bilyaletdinov?
Well, his debut was against Olympiakos, wasn't it?
AEK Athens, I think.
AEK Athens, I always do that. My apologies. AEK Athens in the Europa League or the UEFA Cup, as it was then, I think. But yeah, he basically came on for his debut, and he was part of like an influx of players who we bought at the back selling Jolie and Lescott. We bought in Distan, Heitinger, and Billy Letinov, possibly one more, I'm not sure, but definitely those three. And he was the most exciting one because he was like obviously an attacking player. And when he came in, I think he plays him off the right. I think he brought him in and put him on the left and moved Pina to the right, which I thought was strange at the time because at that time we were in the full swing of, you know, like Baines Pina sort of, you know, partnership. And it was, you know, it was one of the most stable, safe parts of the team. But then Billy Letinov came in and he goes on to the left and he was a beast in his first game. He was whipping in corners, whipping in free kicks. And like, it was apparent straight away that he was, you know, his main skill was like long distance, you know, passing, long distance shooting. He looked great on his debut. Mm. And he was the one player who taught me the lesson everyone has to learn. And some people like myself learned the hard way, is you can't trust a YouTube highlights video. Now, bear in mind, 2009, so it's not as commonly, wasn't as commonly known then as it is now. It's the video I watched when before we got Billy Letinov, when we linked with him. I'm telling you, it's not up on YouTube. I looked for it today, but it's not up anymore. But he looked like Kevin De Bruyne. Honestly, he was just a machine in the Russian league. He was everywhere. None of the players could live with him, but he was playing in like a number 10 position.
Mm.
And I remember thinking at the time going, well, he's not going to come in on the left because of Pienaar, and he's not going to come in at number 10 because of Cahill, because Cahill was very much established then. He was nowhere near the end of his Everton career yet. So I thought, well, maybe this is what we're going to do. We're going to bring him in and put him on the right, and he's going to cut in on his, you know, absolute rocket of a left foot, and, you know, the same way Pienaar does on the other side, and we'll have, like, you know, overlapping fullbacks the same way we have with Baines, and we'll have one at right back as well. Obviously, we can get into it a little bit later on about how it didn't work out like that, but I was dead excited for him. His video made him look amazing, and then when he came in for his debut, and he was just fantastic against, you know, admittedly a weaker side, a European side, but I was excited. I thought he was going to be absolutely quality.
Well, I think it's funny you should say that, because my dad gives me a lot of stick over Billy Letinov, because I went running to him saying, we're getting this fella, he's going to be amazing. He's like you say, he's got an absolute wonder, the left foot, he's going to score some brilliant goals for us. And to be fair, he did score a couple of brilliant goals for us, but it was more, again, I remember seeing him. He wasn't actually a starter, I don't think, but he made a few appearances at the Euros the year before in 2008, and Russia did really well. I think they got to the semi-finals and were knocked out by Spain. But they beat the Netherlands and everything, I think, at that tournament. They were really, really good. And, of course, they qualified at England's expense. So we knew a lot about that Russian team. And I'd seen more of Billy Letinov than probably most people had at that point. And I thought, he's going to be brilliant. And, obviously, it wasn't to be. What about you, Max? Were you aware of Billy Letinov at all before he signed?
Yeah. That, as you say, that 2008 Russian team. Like, I think Alan Zagaev was the you know, the sort of the star off the back of it all. But not too far close behind, you did have Billy. I think we've learnt now from Umar Nias that if what you see isn't what you get when it comes to sniffing players from that Russian market. But I mean, everything that we say now is obviously in retrospect, and you know, we can't help but be a bit jaded. I mean, yeah, his sort of long distance game was absolutely sensational. I think it's pretty obvious now, as I say, looking back in retrospect, he just didn't have the physical attributes to sort of cope with the Premier League. And as you say, you know, did quite well in Europe. But yeah, he was came in as part of the good group of players. I mean, Johnny Eitinger, Sylvain Distan, so, you know, a good sort of group of players that he's come in with. Was never going to be the best left foot at the club. That was always Leighton Baines. Was never going to be the left-sided midfielder at the club. That was always Stephen Pienaar. It wasn't exactly going to be the best attacking midfielder, you know, that was between Timmy Cahill and Mikel Arteta. So he was in a sort of position where he had to come in and be, you know, outstanding straight away, which is always a pretty high bar to sort of live up to. I mean, I was there at Wolves away, which was the anniversary of that, wasn't too long ago, when we beat Wolves at the Molyneux. And Billy Letinov scored one of his trademark absolute screamers into the top corner from about 25 yards out, and I think Phil Neville went and did them one better and scored one that was like pretty much identical. Yeah, I think that was in his first season. And then obviously Stephen Pienaar's left, gone to Tottenham, which has obviously freed them up a bit more to, you know, press on and do more things in a blue shirt. And I mean, got examples of that goal against Manchester United when we went and beat them 3-1, scored it again. They all seem to be like this trademark similar goal. And I remember a one against Portsmouth, which, if I'm not wrong, was about 35, 40 yards out, which was an absolute peach. But yeah, again, while all these sort of goals are flying in once every other couple of weeks, he's just not really making he's not making himself one of the first names on the sheet. And the club sort of moved on in that time. And I mean, nice fella by all accounts. I mean, I've met him a couple of times, actually. I met him, firstly, it was at Bohemians. We played Bohemians, you know, when the London riots were going on. And we had our first game against Tottenham, I think it was, away, postponed. And we decided to go and play against Bohemians in Ireland. So I met him there. And not too earlier before that, and I've still got the video on my phone. I was only young as well. Don't even know if I was a teenager, but we played Bury in a pre-season friendly, and someone had brought a Russian flag. I don't know why. I don't even think he'd just signed for us. I think it was a couple of seasons in, actually. But I think, you know, that's fair to say it. You know, people did have high thoughts of him, and, you know, thought he was a decent player. Just shame it didn't work out.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point there about the situation of positions like Baines, Pienaar, the likes of Arteta and Cahill. Like, it was very hard to find a place for him in the starting 11 when you had established stars in the team like that. It begs the question, really. Obviously, we got a lot of money for Joleon Lescott, and I just think at times he was a good player, and I don't think he's as bad as some people might say, but we could have spent that $9 million a lot better on someone who could have added something to the team in a position where we were weaker, maybe, because Billy Letinov wasn't really the answer as a right winger, unfortunately. It's just because we have bought a proper right winger with that money, as opposed to splurging it on a granted very gifted player. But maybe the money was, it was a bit of a panic buy in the wake of the Lescott sale.
Yeah, I mean, possibly. I remember just at the time thinking, like, it'll come good, because Moyes did not get many wrong. Mm. Like, he the odd one, you can probably count on your hands in his entire spell, the amount of transfers that he brought in, which didn't come off, and especially ones that spent decent money on. Like, I mean, it's sad to say, I think Billy Letinov was one of the ones that counts against them alongside, you know, the Krolstrup and the like. But obviously, when we got Lescott's money in, he did waste it. Like, he brought in the like-for-like replacement for Lescott for a lot less money. He brought in Distan, who was almost the same profile of player, you know, like, big, strong, left-footed centre-half who can, who had, you know, a decent pace to go alongside Jagielka. All right, he was a few years older, but, you know, the shape he was in, it didn't really affect him. But what we needed at the time, more than anything, was a new right back and a new right midfielder, and we brought Heitinger in, and I think people expected him to be the right back, and then it was become very quickly apparent that he was a centre back, and he could, you know, probably only played a couple of games at right back, and then Billy Letinov comes in, and, you know, people assume, well, is he going to be the right hand side Pienaar, and he can't play there either. So it was like we bought two players for very good money at the time, especially for Everton when, you know, we weren't, like, you know, flush for cash, but we bought in a £10 million, £9 million player in the same position as Stephen Pienaar, and then Heitinger, who was, I think he was £6 million, £5 million, in the same position as Jagielka, who was another nailed-on starter. So it was, either it was panic buying or it was not very well-researched, you know, investments, and that was just un-Moyes-like at the time, I think. And all right, the two of them, you know, pulled their weight with regards to them. They weren't complete flops. Particularly Heitinger did all right at Everton and, you know, did quite well at times. But it just wasn't what we needed. We needed a right back. We needed a right midfielder. And we went out and got a left back and a left midfielder and a centre back. It just didn't make sense to me.
It's just bizarre when you think everyone goes on and, like, with retrospect, they look back on David Moyes and they always remember how he did so many scouting reports and he used to take ages looking over players. And it's just bizarre that, given that much research, and all of a sudden we come into some money and he goes and makes those kinds of decisions. It's quite bizarre, and maybe a bit of a death knell, I think, for David Moyes' career at Everton, because it's not often we had that kind of money to spend kicking on from the cup final the year before. We could have gone somewhere, but he made the wrong decision.
Yeah, I mean, it was something you could definitely say against Moyes at his time at Everton, that when he had money, he didn't buy well. When he didn't have money, he did. Like, so when he, all of his £2 million, £3 million signings, £5 million, literally nearly all of them came off. You know, the Artetas, the Cahills, the Pienaars, you know, the Baineses, they were all great. But then when he had any money to spend, he bought a Billy Electon off or something. Yeah.
If I'm not wrong as well, I think at the time when we did sign Billy, he was our third most expensive signing. I mean, you might want to chase me up on that and see if I'm wrong, but still, as you say, it sort of feeds to the point that, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be as critical. I don't think it's a stain on Moyes' record per se, as I mean, you know, we were blessed with Seamus Coleman to come in and do that right midfield job not too much shortly after, but 24 years old at the time he signed for Everton, Billy, and I mean, you know, it is just one of them. There aren't too many examples of Russian players coming in and sort of making the league their own. So you can give them a pass.
Oh yeah, I definitely don't think it's like a stain against Moyes. It's strange for its uniqueness, really, because it was so very rare that he made a poor buy.
Yeah,
he was fantastic almost throughout his whole time at Everton, but this one just it sticks out because it was such an odd signing. You know, decent player. I personally think, and I think you've alluded to it as well, Max, that it wouldn't have been. It just might not be the right league. You know, some players just don't suit certain leagues, but they do others. And it, you know, we weren't used to that because we were used to every player, you know, signing for the first team coming off. Whereas this one might have just been a case of, yeah, he's come in and he's been really good in other leagues, but this just is a bit too fast for him, a little bit too physical. Where you know. That may have been why he never really played him in the number 10. He, you know, maybe once, twice he did, but there's a lot of people crying out for him to play there. And he never would. And I don't know whether that was because he knew, like, he wouldn't survive in the centre of a midfield in the Premier League because they're all too fast and too strong and they'll just bully him.
David Klassen.
Yeah.
Yeah, good scout. Might just another one of them where when it was Trevor Klassen, he did look, you know, badly out of his depth, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Apart from maybe in some of the European games.
Yeah, decent little transition, I think, to the next thing that we're going to go on to talk about as well. We talked about this in the group chat as well, Teddy, the Reece Jones Memorial shirt that we had, the purple shirt that got released. Me and my brother both got one each. I think I got Billy Aletinov on the back and my brother got Yakubu. So,
I never snapped that kit off. That was one of the nicest kits we'd ever done.
Yeah, I think for the novelty value of having Billy Aletinov on the back as well, I think I had to get him on the back of one of my shirts.
Yeah, definitely.
It's one of them, you just got to hope that they weren't charging by the letter.
Yeah. Tell me about it. He might still be the longest single name player we've had. I think the likes of Calvert-Lewin might beat him up, but they've got a dash, so they don't count.
Mm. Yeah, it's one of those, I think. I think it's what I love about when we sign players with big names like that. I just love to hear people try and pronounce them. How did you first pronounce his name when he arrived?
Do you know what? The way it is, but
I
didn't just like, you know, say it off the top of my head. I practiced it. I made sure I knew. I didn't want to come off as like, I didn't know. So I like read it phonetically and was like, Billy Aletinov. And it's does just read how it says. So I picked it up quite quickly. I've not managed that with every single player with a dodgy name, but with Billy, I got that. And I was a purist for ages. I wouldn't say Billy, don't know why. I was like, Billy Aletinov. Didn't he have Billy Aletinov? And everyone else just called Billy, yeah. And I'm like, no, Billy Aletinov. I was took it very seriously for some bizarre reason.
Yeah, I'd echo that. Like, Billy Aletinov, Strachwellesi, like, I'd write them all out.
Yeah.
I'd make sure I'd have them nailed down. Yeah.
I think for me, it was always a case of whatever I saw first just like stuck in my head, and it was Billy Aletinov for a while. And then eventually it takes you a couple of games of maybe listening to the commentary to suss it out, because up until that point, I'd only seen him at the Euros and on Footy Manager. So that was all I had to run by.
Yeah, I'm I'm still not forgiven Moise Keane for stitching me up on his name. Told everyone for weeks when we were signing him, his name's Moise Ken. I'd heard everyone else calling him Moise Ken, all the pundits who were talking about him. And anything, you know, when the racism thing in Italy came up and they all referred to him as Moise Ken. And then he gets here first day in an Everton top and he goes, well, how'd you say your name? He goes, Moise Keane. I go, oh. Made an absolute idiot out of me to everyone I'd spoke to because they all, like, said, hang on, you told me it was, like, I thought I was right.
I love that sort of stuff, though. I think that's the beauty of, like, the age of social media where, like, players can set the story right, if you like.
I mean, Jagielka's the worst. He knows his name's not Jagielka, but he still just, that's my football name. It's Jagielka or something like that, isn't it?
It's Jagielka, I think.
That's, if you heard him say it, it's absolutely off the wall. But I think he actually said, I've just accepted Jagielka as my name in football, and my actual name is, it's not even Jagielka, it's Jagielka. Like, it's you can't even say it easily. It's a Polish name, isn't it?
Yeah, pronouncing Polish names is probably the hardest one for me. I think Blaszczykowski, that took a while to get it with.
Ah, Paul struggled with Tosin for ages. Kept calling him Tosin. Put my head in. Kept connecting him, but it wasn't like he was determined that it was Tosin. He just had a quirk when he couldn't get his head around it.
Yeah, it's one of those with Billy Alekhinov. It was just a case of, like you say, I think reading it out phonetically was the best part of it because, like, I couldn't suss it out for the life of me. Because, like I say, I found him on Football Manager even before those Euros, I think, and he was a beast on that, by the way. So it was like I was adamant that this guy was going to turn out to be amazing, and then obviously it didn't really work out that way. He was, like you say, I think he got knocked off the ball too easily, and I think he was too slow. He just really wasn't, like you say, he wasn't cut out for the Premier League, but maybe he probably would have cut the mustard in, like, maybe a Serie A or a slower league, perhaps.
Yeah, probably. It's we'll never know, but I've got fond memories of him anyway. I just think it was the wrong league, wrong club for him. I think he wanted to do well, but he just wanted too much time on the ball. So Max has got it in one. He was an earlier version of Klaassen. Like, he had the talent, and it just didn't work out for him.
So what would you say? Just unfulfilled potential, or
probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's a difficult way to describe Billy Alekhinov because it was clear that he could deliver because he scored those screamers we were talking about. But
yeah, he did hit some thunderbolts, didn't he?
Yeah, I think perhaps it was just a case of wrong league, wrong time, maybe wrong club as well. Maybe certainly didn't really fit into this side, like you say, full of established first team. It was always going to be a big ask for him, and I think you can all say he did all right, and he gave us a few fond memories with those goals. But Billy Alekhinov obviously moved on in 2012. He went to that Andy Makacha. There's a name I can't pronounce. Like a Chikala or whatever. He went there, I think, and
Anzi'll do.
Anzi, yeah. I used to love that. That was my favourite one, trying to pronounce that, actually, when they first burst onto the scene. They came and went as well, similar to Billy Alekhinov did at Everton, really. Like, as a club, Anzi just came and went, didn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe it's just the story of Russian enigmas.
We've got another one. It's not. He's Uzbek. Tell a lie. I'll take that back. Not Russian, is he?
But
it's
Ali Usmanov.
Yeah. Sorry, Alisha. Just called you Russian and you're Uzbek. My mistake.
Well, let's hope he shows up and stays for a bit longer than 2.5 years.
Hope he's not a two year spell.
No, let's hope he delivers. There you have it, guys. That's the Remember the Name section of the show done. Where we are going to be looking back on Everton kits, past and present. We've got Max and Teddy with me again to look over it, and these two are really excited about this show. We're really looking forward to delve into the archives and look back on their favourite Everton kits. So, first things first, Max, what's your favourite Everton kit of all time?
Right, my Like, I have a season that takes the crown for Everton kits, in my personal opinion. And it might just be, as I say, subjective attachment, because you know, we did do bloody well this season. I think we finished fifth, and it was the season where we got to the FA Cup final. The home kit was fantastic. We obviously beat Liverpool, not Liverpool, at the FA Cup in it. And then the away and the third kit followed a similar template, if you will. So, like, you know, same collars, same sleeves, but white and navy for the away kit, and then a sort of a fluorescent green, or however you want to call it, for the third. And it was just absolutely beautiful. And it had, like, inscribed on the inside of the shirt, so you obviously couldn't see it, but on, like, the bottom rim of the shirt, it had, if you know your history, as, like, a little subjective touch. And I don't think you get that all too often any of these days, anyway, with your partnerships with certain sportswear manufacturers. So, yeah, 2008, 2009, if you look them kits up, I think they are absolutely beautiful. Go on, Teddy. What have we got?
Well, I'll start with my favourite home kit, and it's no surprise, because anyone who listens to us or follows me on Twitter, I always throw this in whenever anyone does any kit-related conversation. And it's the 2014-15 shirt, which was the first one with the current badge, the second year of Roberto Martinez when we went back into Europe, first one with Umbro. So it was the one with the navy socks, basically. Just think that's the perfect Everton kit for me. Perfect Everton home kit, anyway. From the I like the granddad collar. I always like granddad collars on kits.
The material was dead nice as well, wasn't it?
Material was dead nice. The new badge looked amazing. The tone of blue with the sort of it had sort of like a navy, I don't want to say pinstripe, but it was like a horizontal, like, you know, sort of texture and stripe going through it. Obviously the navy socks, the white shorts, it just made us look class. I've pined for a kit like that ever since. And to be honest, I wasn't excited to have Umbro back at the time, because, you know, whilst the season before we had that shambles of a badge, and the night kits obviously weren't as good as they went on to be after we'd left them. Sod's law, Everton. when I saw that kit, I was just like, that's silly good. Like, yeah. I don't care who's made it, that Umbro have smashed it there.
Let me raise this to you. One of the main critiques from fans and me as well, from those batch of Umbro kits, they made the strange decision, in my opinion, to have Umbro branded on the sleeve. So just in text, no logo, just Umbro written on the sleeve.
That's right, yeah.
As we say, as a football purist, that is kind of off-putting to me. Did that not defer your admiration for this kit in any way?
No, bother me that. I can understand why it would bother you, but, like, for me, that I don't mind stuff like that. Like, even some funky brands, when they've got, symmetric. I like symmetry, me. So if it's got, like, symmetrical, nice, tidy logos down the arms, like the Kappa kits do this, I don't mind that. I think that looks good. What I don't like is something that Umbro did, you know, back in the era when you were talking before with the 2009 kit, which I did have and I still quite like. But do you remember when Umbro had the logo that was too high? It was like, it was up on the shoulder, but the badge was on the breast.
Yeah.
The I hated that, because it was just no symmetry, and the Umbro was just the stretched out diamonds. It wasn't like the small one we've got now. But no, I didn't mind that the Umbro's on the sleeves. I wouldn't have... it might not have looked good if we had a sleeve sponsor at the time, because it would have just been more text, wouldn't it? But we didn't. So it was just the Premier League or, you know, what have you, the Europa League badges on the arms. It didn't bother me.
It beats Angry Birds, I suppose.
Yeah, true. But no, I know exactly what you mean, because it was just the lettering Umbro, wasn't it, on the sleeve? And no, I that personally didn't bother me, because it was symmetrical. If you only had it on one, I wouldn't have liked it, but I didn't mind it.
Okay. What about you, James? Come on, lad. What are your favourite kits?
Bit of a mad one, this. We've gone for two different eras of Umbro so far, and I'm going to go back to another era of Umbro in the late 90s. I'm going to go for the 99-2000 home kit. We only had it for one season, but it was an absolute belter of a kit. If anyone wants to go and look back at that one, it was the kit we wore when we last won at Anfield, which tells you about how long we're looking
back. Was it 1-1?
It was one of the kits with 1-1 on, but it was like the only decent home kit with 1-to-1 on.
Oh yeah, I know the one. Yeah.
It had the Umbro stripes on the shoulder, a bit like the one we had, not this season, the season before, where we had like the sort of Umbro diamonds in a white stripe, but it was over the shoulders. It was a really good kit, and I think that was a throwback to the sort of 82 kit we had, where we also had the Umbro diamonds on like a stripe on the shoulder. It was just a really nice little trim, I thought, and it was a very, other than the Umbro stripes on the shoulder, I thought it was a very, like, back to basics kit, and I like that. I don't like too much hoo-ha over the kit. If it's blue and it, like, less is more sometimes, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I think to sort of sum that up as a whole, honestly, if I was to give you, like, looking back at our entire history, my favourite Everton kit ever, it'd be the kit from the 60s. It's just blue shirts, white round collar, white shorts, and then it'd be a toss-up between blue and white socks. I think there's a brilliant quote from Harry Kattrick saying that, you know, they'll know who we are with Everton. We turn up in blue shirts, white socks, white shorts and what have you. So they always sort of stood out to me, seeing, you know, Alex Young, Brian Lebone, that group of players just stood out for a mile. And I think a conversation we were having off camera before we started recording is that, like, some teams now sort of have a prestige aside, given with the kit that they produce. I think Barcelona is obviously like the prime example of that now. It's like the famous stripes, but there's that sort of quality associated with the kit of a team. And I think when I look back to that 60s era and I see that kit, it just stands out to me always.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Like I like the stripped back sort of like old school looking ones. What are we chatting on away kits then? We've all said a home kit. Now what do we reckon for away kits and third kits?
Right, okay.
Let Max go first again.
I was a massive fan of was it the first season that Nike come in, the Nike partnership with Nike, when we had the all black strip?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I've said, I felt quite let down by the home strip that year because it was very, you know, template basic. The really weird cuff sleeves, which were sound if you got it long sleeve, because it just wrap around your ankle, but it was just unnecessarily fat when you went short sleeve. And I think, like, every other standard Nike club, so I think, like, Hanover or Mainz, you know, they'd have the exact same, but in red. But when it comes to the away kit, Nike absolutely knocked it out of the park. We had an all-black collared strip, which was a lovely material, just illuminated with yellow. So, like, the features were yellow. And interestingly enough, so that season, it was a sort of me and me peak Everton fanboyism. I was one to get names on the back of shirts every year. And that year, on the home kit, I got Jelavic. On the away kit, which is the black one, I got Heitinger. And the one after that, I got Fellaini. All immediately that season went down the shitter or got sold.
Yeah, I had the black one. I think the black one was the only one I bought that season. And I had Jelavic on the back.
Lovely kit.
That it wasn't felt for the kit. The Jelavic year, I think it was, wasn't it? Like, when he came in and just took the piss.
They were the Lecoq Sportif kits. They were dead nice as well, I thought. They were for Lecoq Sportif last offering. I think we had a yellow away strip. That was lovely as well.
That was brilliant.
Do you remember the cream polo? Like a cream polo with the collar. We knocked Chelsea out the FA Cup in them and had the hoop socks.
That year was just the best for Lecoq Sportif for me, because we had the dead plain home shirt, which was just all blue, and had like a sort of thing across the chest, but that was blue as well. But you could tell from stitching that it was
different, yeah.
That it was a feature, because on the away kit was the exact same template. It was neon pink with, but that feature was navy. But they'd obviously just double blued it on the home kit, and then that absolute elite level kit, that vanilla and navy kit with the hooped socks. Unbelievable. That was one of my shouts for the away kit. I think that year was one of our strongest like sets of like three kids. There was no bad ones in that. Like, all right, people might have thought the pink was a bit, you know, too much, or the home was a bit boring, but for me, that every kit that year was great.
Yeah, for me, for the best set of kits, I'd say the, and obviously it's associated with a good year as well, we got in the top four, the 04-05 season, but again, all three kits were just so less is more. Decent blue kit with just the white sort of trim by the shoulders, and then I'm pretty sure it was completely plain white away kit and black third kit, I think, and it was, all of them were just subtle, basically, and I think that's, like you say, I think that's the way Everton kit should be.
Tell you what was banging. Do you remember, I think it might have been that second year, actually, Martin, no, it was Martinez's third year, tell a lie, the green third kit that we beat Southampton, I think it was 3-1 or 3-0 away, and we never wore it again. We beat Reading in the cup, I'll tell a lie, because I remember going to Reading, we beat Reading in the cup wearing that kit. It was absolutely gorgeous, and it had like a black band.
On the gold? The khaki. Like green and gold?
No, not green and gold. It was like...
orange, wasn't it? Like,
yeah, orange highlights. Oh, that was splendid.
So I just remember the Chang logo being in like a gold or an orange.
It was orange, yeah. You love that kit, don't you? You bring that up every time kits get mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what else was class? And it's going to sound like I'm obsessed with this year, but like it's just brilliant. The same year, 14-15, I think it was, when we first went back with Umbro, the third kit, which was white and purple.
Yeah.
It's now being probably known more as the Justin Bieber kit. When Justin Bieber had a kickabout on Robert Earl's private island, owner of Planet Hollywood, he had a load of football kits, and the Everton third kit with, you know, the white top with the purple detail and the purple shorts and the purple socks. Justin Bieber's just having a game of footy in a full Everton kit. It was the most surreal thing, but I think that was one of the nicest kits we've had.
I just have memories of Eto scoring those goals in that kit.
Yeah.
While wearing the number five.
Yeah, definitely. Quality. We've had loads of decent ones that are like, you know, disappeared. Like, depends on your taste, though, doesn't it? Obviously, I absolutely hated the home kit from this particular season. The Allardyce year, I hated the home kit, but that grey away kit with like the sort of design with the tower on it. A lot of people didn't like that because it was like two or three tones of grey across the kit. I didn't mind that. I wouldn't put it up there as one of my favourites. But
no, I'll be honest. I hated that one.
Did you?
The season. Yeah, the season Mars. Those kits. I feel like we're in danger now. Of every season that we have like a good kit per se, like the reputation of that kit depends on if we fucking turn up or not.
Oh, absolutely. When that, my favourite kit, you know, being the home kit, when Martinez is second year, we were bossing Europe, and I was thinking, if we win a European trophy
in this kit,
it's just like, please, like I always think, you know, if we get like a terrible kit, I always think, I hope we don't win something in that kit because it'll ruin it for me. Not really, but like,
that's what I will say, is that first Martinez season, the kits were, in my opinion, atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah, not just the
obviously with the crap badge, but
the third kit from that year was the best of a bad bunch, like the sort of silver and navy. I still didn't like any of the kits, but the colours on that were, you know, passable, so that made it not as bad. But the yellow and blue one and the home kit,
Again, I'm a massive advocate of yellow Everton away kits, but they absolutely destroyed that one.
Too much, far too much.
Again, like I say, less is more. And I think we haven't really had an all-yellow away strip since, again, I think it was 99-2000 when I last remember an all-yellow away kit.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, we had...
Sound 90s, very 90s.
In 2004, we had... we finished 17th and Rooney left in the summer. We had a yellow kit that year. It was a blue shorts.
That was a decent kit, that. In fact, that whole season, despite how rubbish the season was another season full of good kits.
Well, we had
Puma that way.
Yeah, it was Puma still then.
Oh no, tell a lie, it was Puma, yeah, you're right. We had a baby blue kit as well. We never ever once wore it. It was like a sky, it wasn't quite like City sky blue, it was like a
I bought that kit. Well, my dad bought me that kit, and I had Rooney on the back, obviously.
Yeah. And
that's all I can really remember about that kit. Like I say, I don't ever remember seeing us playing it.
I don't think we did, but that season, I always remember we had like a sort of sparkly glitter effect inside the Everton badge, and then never had it again, or even explain why we had it that season.
Yeah, because you put it in the wash, and the bleeding, like the reef from the tower had fallen off. That's why.
But like we had like it was just like no reason for it. It was just like it filled the infills, like you know on Microsoft Paint, where you just fill a colour into a shape. It was like someone had just done a glitter effect and just filled the Everton badge in. There was no explanation for it or anything.
Yeah.
Strange. But
again, that's another case of a decent set of kits being marred by a poor season.
I know. So maybe we just need to have bad kits from now on.
That's it, yeah. No, but again, I think the 2004-05 season, like I say, all three of those were pretty solid. I think, obviously, we're now on the topic of worst kits. So, what would be your worst kit, Terry?
It's got to be the home one for the Allardyce year. It's a shame that's what we're calling it now. But that sweat patches one with the Umbro diamonds down the sleeve, which were just like a darker tone of blue, that was a bad kit. I hate that. It just looked awful. And it matched an awful season, frankly.
I think, like I say before, I'm a massive fan of the Umbro diamonds down the sleeve, but if it has to be in white on a plain blue kit, like the way we did it in 2000, that one was horrific, that 2016-17 season. And I'll be honest, I actually bought the kit because I thought, this is going to be the season when we take off here. And then I got Sandro on the back as well, just to add insult to injury.
I remember that kit coming out, like, you know, when it sort of drops on Twitter, someone photographs it somewhere and someone just held it up and it just looked like a training top immediately. And it was the first season we had Sport Pacer, so no one had seen that yet. And Sport Pacer was just some block white text and no logo or nothing.
Yeah, it was rubbish.
So the kit was awful. The sponsor looked really plain and bog standard. And it was just like, this just looks terrible. And, honorary mention there. I mean, people might not agree with me here, but this season's kit and a home kit. I'm a big fan of the away kit and the but the home kit and this season's away kit and third kit I think are great, but the home kit's poor. It's so lazy. Like
training top.
You are
very training top to me.
Yeah, you know what the sort of cross hatch design, but it's like this is meant to be Archibald Leach's crosses, and it looks nothing like it. But you've seen other Umbro kits this year, and just thought, couldn't you have done something like that for us?
Yeah.
Like even like look at Schalke's kit, not groundbreaking, but it's well better than ours. Yeah. Like doesn't got this sort of half fin. Again, if it's not symmetrical, I don't like it, and there's no symmetry in the pattern. Throws me head in.
They would basically make a really asymmetrical kit just to wind Terry up, basically.
Doesn't have to be asymmetrical, just don't have like half finished patterns. But they're me two worst ones, how about you?
What about you, Max? Why don't you go first?
Do you know what? We were pretty successful wearing this kit, but I do not like the, I think it was the 85-86 one, where they just basically cut it off at the torso of white. So it's like it's a third white before you even get into the blue. And having obviously like conversations with the family and that, apparently at the time that wasn't a hit with people wearing that kit around them. But yeah, I was really hyped up once we've announced we got the Nike partnership, and then for them to turn in that sort of not the original ones. I mean, I've got me qualms with the big fat cuffs on the sleeves, and I'd say I don't like them. But the season after that, where we changed our badge for sort of graphic design purposes, and we were looking to really crack on as a brand, as it were, and those kits were just trash.
It's worth remembering actually that Nike advised Everton to make it the whole one entity actually as well. It was part of their kit design.
There you go.
So yeah.
I like the badge we've got now a lot. I think it's the best badge, you know, version of the badge yet. But you know, you can still do it and get it right. That like one season badge was just awful. It's the only blemish on an otherwise brilliant season.
We should have kept it if it meant we won the league.
Well, yeah. What about you then, James? What's your worst kids?
Interesting one, really. I mean, I was saying that 99-2000 kit was my favourite, and I think my worst home kit either has to be one of the two that came either side of it. The 97-99 one, which had the sort of 1-1 yellow stripe in the middle.
Yeah.
And which was actually a strangely lighter blue than any other Everton kit I've seen. And then the Pumas first effort, which was like had the really, really white stripes down the side, like really big white stripes, and made everyone look fat in it for some reason.
Yeah. On the subject of a lighter blue and like too much white, that one under Le Coq Sportif where we had the V, and the V like sort of looked like a maternity top because like a seam like
over the chest.
The V was too long. It was a dead funny like, you know, shape. The kit didn't sit well on any of the players.
Yeah.
The V didn't like finish at a point. It sort of just squared off, didn't it, at the bottom?
Yeah.
Like a couple of years later with Umbro, we had another one with a small V.
That was good.
That looked great. It was like, that's how you do it if you're gonna copy the V from the 80s, which I think it's a good idea. But that Le Coq Sportif one, it was the wrong tone of blue for a kickoff. That was one of our worst ones. I even had it and liked it at the time, but look back now and go, oh, what was wrong with me?
Because obviously they did I think under Le Coq Sportif we had a handful of sort of limited edition releases, and I remember that kit. It was the 25th. Anniversary of the 84-85, you know, league and cup winners cup double. So I remember getting that kit to wear, and then remember getting that kit in a box. It was like a birthday present with sort of limited edition badges on it. But yeah, it was a lighter tone of blue, and that that weird stop point, like not quite at your chest, not quite at your belly. It was really odd.
It just made it weird that it didn't finish as a V. It just like it was a V with like a squared off bottom. It was like, is that for real? Like, and when you saw the Umbro attempt a couple of years later, and it was just so much more clean.
It was nowhere near bigger though, and I think that goes. I don't think you could pull off the sort of very long white V now.
Yeah, true, yeah. But the small, I think that's an honorary mention for some of the nicer kits, though. The Umbro version of that kit, I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, looking back, actually, I think that entire season was full of decent kits. We had the green one, and then there was the white one with the sort of, like, hoops on the arms, which was strange, but I actually liked that.
Oh, I know what you mean, yeah. It was, like, white with, like, grey hoops, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I thought it was all right myself.
Yeah, it was all right. It was. I wouldn't put it up there as one of the best, but in a list where there's a lot of bad ones, it's not one of them.
On the note of bad ones, what about bad away kits? We've had a fair few.
Go ahead, Max. I'll let you go first, and I'll have a think.
I'm going to have a little nosy at our away kits. So I've got up like a history of our away kits now. I'm not a big like the. Was it the away or the third? I think it was the away one, as I say, with that season with Nike where they give us the weird sort of the stripes, and we did the International Cup in the US.
The yellow kit.
Yeah, the sort of really standout bright blue and bright yellow.
Yeah.
I wasn't particularly into that, but I've got to be honest with you, mate. I'm not a big detractor of our away kits, as it were. I'm quite a solid fan of them. I don't think to be honest, the ones I have the main complaints about are the sort of bright yellow ones. I don't think we belong in a sort of bright yellow kit, to be fair.
No, yeah. I agree. I'm a big fan of like the sort of dark, like the more like ambery colour, like the one like Teddy was on about from 2004. I think they're the best, and that's the colour I think in Everton away should be. But I just thought that, like you say, that one was a bit too far. And I think the worst one for me has to be the 97-98 with the, again, it was once the first 1-2-1 season with, it was yellow and just blue and black stripes down. It was absolutely horrific.
Oh, I remember that. We switched up the sponsors on that one, didn't we? We went from Danker to 1-1.
That was it, yeah.
No, actually, I've got a funny memory of a family friend who wrestles. He used to fucking come out in that kit when he wrestled in Germany. So I think that kit's quite funny. But yeah, I can understand why you don't like it.
Yeah, it's pretty grim. What about you, Terry? Worst of the week, yeah?
This won't be well received by a lot of people, this, because a lot of people for some reason like this kit. But 2009-10, you know the year we had that big stupid V, the away kit. Yeah. Yeah, it was black with pink stripes collared.
Yeah,
I did that. I thought that was an awful kit, but it was. Everyone else seems to like it. It was black with the pink stripes, and the Chang logo was white. It just looked so mismatched for me. If the Chang was pink, I might have got on with it a lot more. But it just looked like a Las Vegas like club sign. It was just so strange looking. I wasn't a fan of that.
Maybe I like Las Vegas clubs, but I like that kit.
I think you've said that to me before, that you like that kit. And most people do. Everyone I speak to likes that kit, but I hated it.
It was the opening of the floodgates before we got the full neon pink wash over, weren't it? So,
well, everyone likes an amber or yellow Everton away kit, but I'm not with them on that. I'm one of them people. I like a pink kit. I think Everton having a pink away kit is feels right. I mean, as long as the kit's nice, don't get me wrong, you can still make a bad kit, but I've wanted us to have a Palermo-type kit.
Oh, that'd be amazing. I love their kit.
Like a pink top with black shorts and black socks to go against Everton's blue, white, white. I just think that'd be amazing. But we always, like, do pink with, like, you know, flashes of navy, like this year and whatnot, and it's never quite that same pink. It's always, like, a sort of, like, half red, half salmon, you know. I'd love us to have a Palermo type kit, but it's just not in the cards, I don't think.
I wouldn't mind us going somewhere back to that sort of black watch kit with the sort of salmon pink and black.
You know?
Yeah, like a sash.
Yeah, a bit like that, yeah.
Bit like
we haven't had one like that, actually.
Okay, it's haven't
we? Who've got one?
Peru have got a sash like that on there.
Peru,
kit.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, but it's not common in a lot of kits that now, but I think that'd be popular if they made that.
Yeah, well, let's hope. Well, we're getting rid of one, but I think, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's the worst kept secret in Everton Twitter now. We're going to Hummel, aren't we? So,
is it definitely Hummel or is it someone else?
Yeah, it's Hummel. It's been spoke about a few places now. We're going to Hummel. Don't know when it'll be announced or what have you, but it's pretty much nailed on, isn't it?
Hopefully, I mean, I've saw a couple of their numbers this season, like Rangers and stuff. They make their kits and they look pretty decent. So hopefully, if it is Hummel, then we'll get a slightly better effort than we've had the last couple of years, because we've had a couple of weak efforts in a row now, haven't we?
Fingers crossed. I mean, it's a proper lottery with Hummel. Sometimes they're unbelievable and sometimes they're just completely crazy. Like, they've got kits in South America that's like the print of a tuxedo. And then, and then you see Rangers as ones which are quite, you know, quite good. And yeah, I would hope they'd, you know, sort Everton out with a really nice, you know, like classic looking kit and not crazy. I mean, maybe not a tuxedo print, but go a little bit, you know, get a bit creative with the away kits, but like keep it classic with the home kits, please, Hummel.
They go crazy with the away kits. Do that one like they had for. Did you see the one for CD Lugo in Spain? Where, like, they were sponsored by Estrella Galicia, the beer, and it was like a pint. It was shaped like a pint with like amber up to the ear, with like a bit of a white head at the top.
Oh no!
And I thought, yeah, who wouldn't want the team's away kit to look like that?
Oh, it sounds. Don't frighten me.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to like pick sort of one Everton kit to erase from your memory, which one would it be?
Probably that home kit from the Allardyce
year. The Allardyce kit, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just awful.
I think that's the first one. We've always had different opinions on this segment here, but I think that's the first one we can all agree on. I'm just happy to... remember when Sport Pezza did their kits for Africa? And as soon as they announced that, I just went right down there and threw my kit in there. Because, like, I'm not keeping this rubbish kit from this season where we've flopped, where I've got Sandro on the back of it. Like some kid in Africa is now having a kicking about in like a little village with a shirt with Sandro on the back.
Yeah, what you do, mate. Never, ever, ever get a new sign on your gate, so especially one who's new to the league, because it's a death.
I've given many players a kiss of death with a shit, or either that, or they've been sold in Rooney's case.
Yeah. Well, Paul did that with Graveson, he said, hasn't he? Like, got Graveson on his shirt, I warned him not to, and he wouldn't listen. And then he left, like, 3 weeks later. Nightmare.
It's just classic, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
But there you have it, guys. That's the end of the kit throwback. But for you guys listening to the podcast, it's time for the quiz. I'm trying to figure out who's going to be taking part in the quiz.
I am quizmaster for today, so it will be a toffee cage match of Everton wit and might between Max and James. So if we can just cue the intense quiz music, please.
Hi, Jerry.
There it is, very intense. So this is If You Know Your History. Often the quiz that I lose to Max, but not today because I can't take part. And if you don't take part, you can't lose. So it will be.
That's life advice right there.
We are going to once again be doing a name the lineup type quiz. So the gentlemen here will take turns naming the starting lineup from an Everton match of years past. I am not as prepared as Jerry, so I have nothing to flip. Please bear with. Yes, so I have, and Jerry will be really proud, I've got the lid of a beard barn to flip.
Ooh.
Jerry's always really really interested in my beard, calls me the bearded one, doesn't he? So we're going to assume that the logo side up is heads and the non-logo side is tails. So we're going to I'll let James call it, because Max is on this quiz a lot more often than James.
All right, then.
Call it?
Heads.
It is indeed heads, so would you like to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Fantastic. So, the game in question that we're going to be looking to, name all the players, and you can include substitutes used, is from Saturday the 20th of February 2010, Everton versus Man United. So, I could have your first player, please.
Did he arguably elect or pronounced absolutely perfectly?
That is correct. And arguably Letanov did play the game, scored a fantastic long distance goal. I could just add a small note here, just that the Man United supporters were beginning to sing Sign On at 1-0. He hit an absolute rocket and they all just singing it. Next player, please.
Leon Osman
did in fact start the game. Next one, James, please.
Dan Gosling
was a substitute and was used, came onto the pitch in the 17th minute for Dinyar Belyalatinov. Well done.
Yeah, I'll round off the third goal scorer, Jack Rodwell.
Jack Rodwell did indeed play. He came on for Stephen Pienaar and scored a goal that made me go on to profess to a Man United supporting friend of mine that he was going to be as good, if not better, than Steven Gerrard.
Oh, there you go.
That wasted every single minute you've ever listened to me on the Toffee Blues, because I know nothing.
Hey, Terry, I've got one for you.
Go on.
Did Stephen Pienaar play?
Stephen Pienaar did play and was the one who came off for Rodwell.
Yeah, because you just told us.
Did I? This is why Jerry does it. Well, I will include one of the non-used substitutes then, because I've just dropped the bollocks, so you can't have that one. I do apologise, Mr. Editor Man.
Love it.
I don't know. Don't love it. You've got to use another player.
I've got to pick another player now.
But I'm letting you get away with it. You say one player on the bench who didn't come on, because I've just given away a player, you can use it. But once that player's used, you can't use it again.
Oh, I've got you. All right. Tim Howard
did indeed play. He didn't even need help from me with that one or anything.
Mikel Arteta.
Mikel Arteta did, in fact, start the game. Next one.
Louis Saha.
Louis Saha did indeed start the game. Max?
Leighton Baines.
Leighton Baines also started the game. Well done, James.
Sylvain Distan.
Sylvain Distan did indeed start the game too. Well done.
Johnny Huizinga.
Johnny Huizinga did start the game also. Got a good rally going on here.
Phil Neville.
Phil Neville did indeed start the game. Another good day. Another good answer, James.
What positions have we had on the pitch? We got the back line entirely.
We've got the back four, the keeper. We've got the striker.
Louis Saha. Landon Donovan. That was when he was on loan with us. The kit. See, we're talking about kits. Got me associating with players now. The 85 sort of reproduction. Landon Donovan, that was his first stint at Everton.
Landon Donovan did start the game, so we've now had the whole lineup and the two substitutes that we used. So James, you can get someone who was on the bench but didn't play.
Ooh! All of a sudden, I realised how small that squad was.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Who else did we have around that time? Who's the other striker? Yakubu.
Yakubu was in fact on the bench, so we now need a tiebreaker. But we can't use the goal scorers because we've already mentioned them just in passing as we've been discussing it. So, how do you like the sound of naming the Man United team?
Oh, okay.
Have a go.
Really changing up.
Is it my go?
Yeah, Max first.
Yeah, scorer for Man United, Dimitar Berbatov.
Dimitar Berbatov did start the game and indeed score.
I think the assist for Berbatov was Antonio Valencia.
Antonio Valencia did start the game.
Rooney.
Rooney, of course, did start the game.
Yeah.
Patrice Evra.
Patrice Evra did start the game. Don't get all this team because I won't know what to do for a second tiebreaker. But go on.
Safe one, Edwin van der Sar.
Van der Sar did start the game.
Vidic.
Manu Vidic was on the bench but not used.
Oh!
And we have
kick some Tim Pop player over at Vidic.
Should we carry on the rest of the team or should I just tell you who you didn't get?
I mean, we could guess still fail, I suppose.
Why not, yeah.
Who was my next guess going to be? Michael Carrick.
Carrick did start.
Nani
did not play.
Okay. Is that it? We done? Or?
Yeah, we'll say it's done.
you'll have to tell me the rest of that starting 11 now, though, because I'm going to kick myself.
Yeah, Gary Neville, the two centre-backs were Wes Brown and Johnny Evans.
He picked them over Visage.
I know. Ji-Sung Park played Darren Fletcher alongside Carrick. And the substitutes, because that was the whole lineup, the substitutes were Obertan, Michael Owen, and Paul Scholes.
Solid.
So that leaves Max as the winner of a very, very close fought quiz. Well done, Max.
I remember that game because after Billy sunk that one in, the fella next to me started crying. He's saying, I've had a dead tough week. I'm just made up that we're playing well.
That's first time.
I'll never forget that. It was so good.
Don't laugh, but Amy could be listening. I hope he's having a good week this time round, years later. But yeah, to claim your prize, what is your song of choice to see right, at the end?
Let me get the tunes blaring. We'll go for Danny California by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Danny California by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and would you like to tell us a little bit about the song as to why?
Just Red Hot Chili Peppers, isn't it? Like, probably my favourite rock band. I've read Aunt Nikita's book, Scar Tissue, Boss book. I would recommend if you like listening to like people who do bad shit during acid trips, then I'd highly recommend it. I think Danny California, if I'm not wrong, is like an imaginary friend of Aunt Nikita's. I think he's like it's a figment of his imagination. If I'm not wrong, I remember reading that. I don't know whether it was in the book or elsewhere, but it's like this girl that he's made up. It's like idealised and perfect, I think. And it's probably my favourite song off Stadium Arcadium anyway. So that's my reason for selecting. It's a tune and a half.
Right, brilliant. So, even though I'm not the host of the whole podcast, I have been hosting the quiz, so I'll as the people are listening to tunes of Red Hot Chili Peppers, Danny California, I'll say thanks both guys for being on the show. I've really enjoyed it. Some really good segments this evening, and yeah, take care of yourselves, and you know, take care about everyone else listening as well. Take care of yourselves as well. It's a hard time everyone's going through at the minute, but when we will get through this together. So, Max, see you, mate.
Brilliant. Nice talking to you guys. Look after yourselves. Take care.
James, take it easy, mate.
And you guys, stay safe. You know what to do.
All right. Brilliant. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And wash your hands. Stay safe.
Ta-da.
Wash your hands. Don't panic, mate.
Minnesota, North Dakota man with a gun for the quota. Down in the Badlands, she was sad.